Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day here with Bob, Dave, and more. Hello, John.
Hello, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. We got some news surrounding a guy we've been asking you about, and that is Jermaine Ifedi signs a one-year deal with the Chicago Bears. I haven't seen any terms yet. I don't know if you have, but surprised by this news?
No, because, I mean, at some point you got to take a deal, and I'm sure it's not going to be a very satisfactory deal. And I guess the big surprise is I thought, you know, he would maybe get a one-year deal at $8 million. And, you know, at this stage right now, you're very lucky to pull a one-year deal at $3 million or a one-year deal at $4 million. And, you know, he's going there with the idea that he's either going to be, you know, a backup tackle, compete for the tackle job, or maybe even be a guard. So I think you can see that he missed the market, and that's where I'm a little bit surprised, because, hey, listen, we all know the potential of George Fant. I mean, he's a great athlete. He was a former basketball player. He can play left tackle, right tackle, but he gets $9.1 million. But, you know, here's Ifedi, you know, who, you know, at least was starting most of his 4 years. I mean, he didn't miss many games. I know he had over 60 penalties and all those different things. But to think that, you know, he's going to come in maybe two-thirds less than George Fant, I find to be remarkable.
Yeah, same here, John. And, you know, let me ask you this. Oh, I know. The one question that we were asking, is Jermaine Ifedi considered a bust?
See, and I would say no, because, I mean, was he considered a big gain? No, but again, what happens, and I chart this every year, is that you look at the picks from 21 to 32, and very few of them are going to get the fifth-year option, because basically, you know, I mean, to be a hit and to be able to get that fifth year, I mean, you almost have to play at a Pro Bowl caliber level, because now all of a sudden it's gonna, you know, your salary goes from a rookie to now being, you know, $10 million, $12 million, $13 million, and so it becomes a little bit too expensive. And so when you also look at the big picture, you know, a pick like Ifedi is going to be, you know, looking to be a second-round choice, because you're going to have second-round grades on him. That's why John Snyder is one of the most aggressive in trying to trade back and trying to do it. And in some years, you know, you just have to take needs. And that's one of the things that I think that you can see. You know, if John Snyder stays in the first round, he's taking a need. Like, for example, you know, he maneuvered around last year, got the picks from 4 to 11 and all that. But he needed to make sure he took care of the one need, and that was defensive end. And that's why he put a first-round pick on L.J. Collier, although most people thought he was a second-round pick. I'm sure John Snyder thought he was a second-round pick. But, you know, you don't want to keep moving back and moving away from talent. At some point, you've got to make a choice.
Well, John, how decent do you think Ifedi's replacement will be, Brandon Shell?
I think it's going to be fine, because I think what he does, I mean, he fits this system, you know, because when you look at it, Mike Solari wants big, okay? And again, in fact, I'm going to have to look at the numbers here tonight at some point, you know, to see, you know, how much trouble all the right tackles in free agency had. But, you know, Shell is really good on running hits. I mean, he can take a defensive end and drive the guy back 5, 7, 8 yards at different times. He's real good against the run. Certainly he struggles against the pass. But again, you could say the same thing about Ifedi. You could say the same thing about Darrell Williams, who hasn't gotten a job yet. You could say the same thing about Jack Conklin, you know, who gave up, you know, he struggles against the pass, and he got $14.5 million. But I think in some ways, you know, Shell could be a better fit for what they can do, because, one, he's not going to have the penalties. Two, he's not going to make the mistakes. And I think that, three, I mean, he still comes in at the right age at about 27, 28 years old. So I think they'll be okay with Shell starting at right tackle.
Hey, John,
I guess we lost Bob.
No, it dropped for a second and came back right as I was just about to panic. I'm back. But, hey, John, as far as what this team has done as a whole in the offensive line, we talked about it earlier. We played a cut from Pete Carroll saying, you know, I'd like to keep this group together as much as possible, although it seems like potentially there's going to be more turnover than there's been in recent years. Where are you at with the continuity of an O-line? We hear about it all the time that they work in concert together. They got to develop chemistry. You got to keep those same five together as much as you possibly can. The Seahawks say the same thing, but they rarely do it. Where are you at with that theory?
Well, and I think particularly this year because of the coronavirus and the fact that there probably won't be any OTAs and there may not be a mini camp, I think as much continuity as possible is the key. And that's why, you know, you really don't want to have as many as three new starters. So now, like, for example, when they go to training camp, you know, here can be some of the decisions, because what you look at and you say, okay, if Justin Britt's not going to be here, Mike Iupati's not going to be here, and Jermaine Ifedi's not going to be here, how can you minimize the amount of change? Well, what you can do is that you can put Ethan Posick at center, and you can put B.J. Finney at guard, and then, again, it's going to be an open competition. But, I mean, you can do it that way. So technically, you know, with Posick having been on this team, you're only changing two. You know, like, for example, I mean, you look what's going on with the New York Jets. I think they're in a really impossible situation because now, you know, they brought in three new additions on the offensive line. The only guy that's going to be back is Alex Lewis, the guard. You know, they brought in a center, George Fant at left tackle. They brought in a, so it's like, and so I think that's going to be too much. And also, they'll probably be drafting a tackle with the 11th pick in the draft. I mean, changing over four when you may only have a training camp, and it could even be a shorter training camp, I think is almost impossible. That's going to be really tough to do because, one, you know, the way the new rules are, you don't have enough, you have less padded practices. Two, you have less time for the guys to be on the field working on the offensive line. So I think that's going to be really tough. That's why, you know, I think the best way to do it is to minimize the amount of change. But does that mean, you know, if Finney is better than Posick at center, then you do it that way. I mean, is Philip Haynes get a chance to be the starting guard? Does Ethan Posick get a chance to be in? You open up the competition, but try to minimize the amount of change.
All right, John, I got two questions just to warn Jim. First one being, what do you think is going to happen with the draft? I heard there was some recommendation that possibly they would have each round, you know, because there's so little going on, that they would just have one round per day. How do you think that's going to change at all between now and then?
Right now, according to Roger Goodell, no. I think that what he did, and of course, you know, you had the executive group of seven, you know, general managers and coaches that are on a committee, and I think John Snyder's on that committee, that voted 6-1 that they should move the draft back. But of course, I would venture to say that, you know, most of the ones on that committee, they would have voted very similarly to move free agency back, and Roger seems to be right, because, you know, now you have over, you know, 230 guys of the 394 that have already agreed to contracts, and so if you would have moved it back to this week, it would even be tougher, because now you know the facilities are closed, you can't take guys and have them go to physicians, and, you know, particularly that's going to be tough to do, so that becomes a real difficult thing. So, you know, Roger wants to keep it. Now the question is, where can he have it? Because, you know, if you're going to be, you know, having the draft and knowing it's going to be on TV, and, you know, can you have it in New York or Los Angeles, which, you know, right now everything's shut down in those two states, that makes it tough. And where do you go? And then the problem is, if you have people flying to go to different places, then particularly out of New York and Los Angeles, you know, they may have to go on a 14-day quarantine. So, you know, it's difficult to figure, you know, I can see why the GMs and coaches are doing it, but Roger wants to keep it between the 23rd and the 25th, try to do it as best he can, you know, with videos and conferences and things like that. But as of right now, the draft stays the way it is and the way the free agency started. Nothing changed.
Okay, so the second question was going to be, you know, as far as physicals go, because we know that's sort of interrupting the free agency period. But for, I don't know that I've ever asked you this or not, but when all these pro days, they're doing a physical then with the college guys then, right? What's the latest?
The league has mandated that you cannot send a scout to a pro day. So all pro days have been canceled.
And that includes a physical, right?
That includes a physical, yes.
When they do that?
100%. Yeah. So basically, well, and this is where I think it's going to affect Tua, because, you know, if he's going to be the fifth pick of the Miami Dolphins, the Dolphins haven't had a chance to give him other what he had at the combine, that physical, because the Indy recheck has been canceled. I mean, you can't send him to a doctor right now to get a recheck. And so, you know, they may take the tact. It's like, you know what? We feel shaky about this. And what we're going to do is you know, maybe take Justin Herbert instead. But that decision still has to be made. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's affected by that, particularly those guys that are carrying over injuries.
Okay, John, we ask you about Clowney almost every day. I'm going to try and form it differently here. I'm going to ask you four different questions in one and see if you, the professor, can go four for four on Clowney, the team that he ends up with, the number of years on his contract, the annual salary, and the guaranteed amount.
Okay, and, you know, my guess would be, I still think he has a decent chance of staying here in Seattle. He's not going to be happy making, like, $14 million on a one-year deal. And the guarantee, I'm sure, if they're going to keep it as low as $14 or $15 million, then all $14 or $15 would be guaranteed.
How about that, Jim?
1 year, $14 million.
I got all four, didn't I? I think 14.
I think you
might,
Professor.
Yeah, I think that what's that? Hell, no, you're welcome.
hey, John, Ndamukong Suh was a name that had been brought up. I know Jim was asking about him before. He's reportedly signing a 1 year deal to return to the Bucks for $8 million. Is that about the price range you thought? Did you think he was leaving, or does that just seem like the logical move to stick with Tampa Bay?
No, I mean, that's exactly the number I thought he was going to get. I know when we talked about it yesterday, and the thought is like, okay, because Sue's not going to come in for a discount. That's just not his nature. And I think that you can see that Tampa Bay is really excited about the Tom Brady addition. You can see that they want to try to make sure they keep as much of that defense together as they can. And so, I'm not surprised. I mean, 1 year, $8 million is right in the ballpark figure of what I had. And the only thing that I'm surprised at is he signed so quickly, because a lot of times he tends to wait. I knew the market wasn't going to go up. And, of course, an $8 million defensive tackle for this team, Sue would come in here, and he would not be a starter. Because at the moment, you've got Puna Ford as a starter, and you've got you have Jaron Reed as a starter. So you've got your two starters. That's why if you're going to be paying somebody as a defensive tackle, it's going to be around that $2 million mark, or maybe even a little less than that.
Hey, John, there's an article on Pro Football Talk about Bruce Arians saying that basically there's a perception that Brady can't throw deep, and that's wrong. How do you think Bruce Arians and Tom Brady are going to get along?
They're going to get along great. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, the one thing that he knows is that Brady's smart. He's going to execute the plays, and he'll risk it. And remember, the idea that Bruce Arians has, if it don't risk it, lose the biscuit. I mean, so you want to make sure that he does that. And really, when you look at some of his numbers, I think it's funny because, one of the reasons he couldn't get the ball downfield much was because he didn't have any speed at the wide receiver position. I guess the one guy that was fast, now is here in Seattle, and that's Philip Dorsett, but they really didn't have any real good separation to get those completions. Now, I mean, you've got Chris Godwin, you've got Mike Evans. I don't know what other wide receiver they're going to add, but I mean, you've got the best duo in football. So I think that's going to work out well, and you have a young, talented former first-round tight end in O.J. Howard. I think Arians and Brady are going to get along famously.
Hey, John, we got a question from the 253. Given Penny's injury status and the possibility that he doesn't join the team for active duty anyway until October, what do you think about bringing in Devontae Freeman or Carlos Hyde?
I think that those are two very viable options. Now, I think Freeman's going to cost, in the $5 or $6 million range. And I say that not knowing if he has any market right now, because the running backs pretty much have not had much of a market. But I think those are probably the two best running backs that are out there. And if you can get them for the right price, then you would do it. I mean, you still hold hope that everything's going to be okay ultimately, with Chris Carson, and also certainly with, what you're hoping to get with Rashad Penny for maybe 10 games at the most. But I think that those are the best two candidates right now. But again, like anything else, it depends on the price.
Hey, John, I know you said you don't really care about the logos and teams and uniforms, all that, but the Rams situation is not going well, so much to the point that they've got Eric Dickerson has offered to be the voice of fans who have been angered about the new team logo. He tweeted out, he said, "I reviewed your comments regarding the new logos, and I share in your disappointment. I'll be speaking with the Rams on our behalf." And then he put up two different logos that were created by fans, and he's asking people to vote on which one they like best. And there are two that the team obviously didn't come up with. There's an online petition from the fans out there to change the logo. Nobody likes the new logo. Do you think there's a chance the Rams would reverse course at all, or this is just a done deal and people will just have to get used to it?
I mean, you would have to think that with the investment that they put into it, whatever that was, is probably a done deal. But you know, right now you've got to look and see, okay, where is this team? Because I mean, you know, first off, I mean, a team is not going to be a winning team this year based on how bad things are right now, because you know they've lost seven key players on defense, and also you know they've got Todd Gurley gone, and the running game is one of the most important things for this team. So they're in big trouble right now. So yeah, I think you know you're moving into a new stadium. You're hoping that everything's going to be able to continue to be built, because again, everything, you know, if everything right now is on schedule, but again, with this virus, a lot of things can go. So, yeah, it's like, that's why, but again, me caring about uniforms and caring about logos, that isn't in my bailiwick.
All right. Hey, John, if the Seahawks had, this may be a tough question, but I know you can handle it. If the Seahawks had to either trade or cut a player because of salary to keep under the salary cap, who would be like a surprise guy that you think they might either let go or trade?
I don't think there's any surprise because, again, you know, there's, I mean, again, you go through the list and you figure that now Justin Britt is, and again, they don't have cap problems, you know, under, and particularly with the way that John Snyder's handled this free agency period, you know, you're able to get in a trade, you know, a starting cornerback for a 3.4 cap hit. I mean, you're able to get, you know, two offensive line possible starters for $9.5 million on the average. I mean, we still haven't seen what Bruce Irvin has, but when you think about you go in and you add a volume of players and not one of those players got more than $5.5 million, you're not going to have cap issues. You know, the big cap thing that they're going to have to do is figure out, okay, what are they going to do at defensive end, because Clowney certainly, even though at maybe at a discounted price, is still going to eat up a lot of cap, particularly on a one-year deal. And then you know, you got, you know, Everson Griffin, who's going to probably cost in that $7 or $8 million range. So, but I don't think there's going to be any surprise. I mean, Ed Dixon's a candidate. I mean, the only surprise could be, and I hope this doesn't happen because I think he's such a good player and such a good player for the team. But the surprise guy could be, you know, Bradley McDougal. I mean, that could be one that would be a surprise, you know, because as you are promoting, is that they got to find a way to get Marquise Blair on the field, and that is a possibility. So that, if I'm picking one surprise, that would be the surprise.
Okay. That'd be interesting if that happened, John. It sure seemed to me like Pete Carroll wasn't quite ready to get Marquise Blair out there on a full-time basis, and maybe that will change. This year, we'll see with that. Okay, John, I'm moving on now from Ndamukong Suh because I have to, because he's staying there in Tampa Bay, and so I'm moving on to a different guy that you're going to tell me, Jim. No, you can't. You don't want to have that guy, but I do, John. I do. It's Snacks Harrison. Anybody named Snacks, I'm all over it, John. What do you think, Snacks Harrison? He's a good player too, and he bolstered that defense.
He's a good player, but he retired.
Did he retire?
It's one thing to say he's a good player,
John,
and he's available,
but
if he's not going to play in football.
Wait a minute, I just Googled him. You sure about that?
Yeah.
No.
He wants to retire.
American football.
And unless you hear him change his mind, I mean, what are you going to have him come in and just you know, mop the floors or something like that? Because if he's retiring from football, and you figure, you know, Snack, you know, like any player right now who's big like Snacks Harrison, you know, he can go one of two ways. He can eat a lot, or he can lose a lot of weight. And so Snacks may not be as big as he was when he was playing last year.
Misfit Radio is back, baby.
John. Just back to free agency and the draft and everything that's gone on as scheduled, even though there are tweaks to it, clearly. Did you have any problem with them sticking to free agency happening? People were saying, hey, it needs to be pushed back. They shouldn't do this. It's a bad look, considering what's going on. And similar, you guys touched on it, about the draft potentially being pushed back, and so far the NFL is keeping it. I'm of the opinion, I'm glad that free agency is going on. I don't think it's a bad look. It's going to happen one way or the other. I hope they stick with the draft. I hope it doesn't get pushed back. I understand that, you know, for the kids that are being drafted, it's not going to be the night that they dreamt of in front of a crowd and everything. But where are you at with that in terms of if it was the right or wrong thing to do?
You know, honestly, if you go back, that might be one of Roger Goodell's top 10 good decisions. And you because look at the reality. I mean, remember, the league year did not start until last Wednesday. So now we are 8 days into the start of the league year, and free agency is pretty well close to being done. I mean, because, you know, now, and you've got all these deals. Now, some of them are slow to be posted. You know, like, for example, I was just checking up, and I think maybe, you know, only 55 or 60 of the unrestricted deals, which is now over 145, have been, you know, put on the waiver wire because, again, you still have to find some way to get a physical and some way to get the contract signed and all that. And so it's still been slow in getting those numbers up there. But overall, I think it was absolutely the right thing to do because if you would have started free agency this week, it would have been horrible because, again, there's so much less freedom that you have right now to do things. And so now with the freedom, at least over the past few weeks, kind of drying up, you know, you're now done with this. You know what players you pretty well have. You know, there's still going to be some problems. Like, for example, you know, Michael Brockers, the defensive end from the Rams, who's going to go to the 3-4 defense of the Ravens. You know, there's a concern right now that they can't get his ankle, because he had a high ankle sprain, they can't get it checked out, and they were actually thinking about maybe doing something with Ndamukong Suh. So there's a little bit of worry in that regard, and you're going to probably have guys that may who haven't been to a physical yet, they may fail the physical, and the contract would be void. So that could be still one of those things. But overall, I think that Roger made a great decision in being able to have it because, hey, you know, free agency has been great for all of us to follow, for the fans to follow, but most importantly, for the teams to be able to have teams.
John, as always, good stuff. We appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. The professor, John Clayton, with us every single day. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. And I don't know, quickly, just another quick question for you. And Dave, you just take this one. Any problems with them continuing as scheduled with free agency and or the draft?
Any problem with that as far as...
Yeah, like, people thinking the they should have... Yeah, people thinking, you know what, in light of what's happening, these events should be pushed back or postponed, whatever.
Yeah, well, did John just say 6-1 that the GM, the group, executive group, voted in favor of pushing it back?
Something like that, yeah. I can't remember exactly what
he said. Yeah, I think that's what John said, but yeah, that's surprising to me that, you know, there would be that much demand to get that done. I wouldn't see, you know, I've said this and I'll try to make it quick, but they need to be nimble about these kinds of things with this big delay that's going on and, you know, and make a quick decision. And I feel like, yeah, I would like to see it pushed back a little bit only for from the standpoint of, you know, the physical part of it is anybody that's ever bought a home, I mean, the last thing you want to do, I mean, I know people do this, they waive the inspection, but, you know, you look at a house, there could be all kinds of things going on inside of there. Could have been flooding and structural damage and things like that, and that's the thing with the athletes, it's the same thing. That would be my biggest concern, is not getting full health data from these prospects or free agents.
All right, well, coming up, we'll get Jim's take on that as well. Coming up, we'll talk more about Quentin Dunbar, one of the new acquisitions of your Seattle Seahawks, and how much is he going to help shore up what's going on in the secondary, the pass rush, his impact there. All of that is coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Song is this, Brian?
This is Closer by the Chainsmokers.
Huh. All right. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. It is free. It's convenient right now. So take us with you. It's very, very, very convenient. You can get the podcast. You can get the video, although there's not much to watch in terms of live in-studio video, but other videos posted on the website, stories like Jim Moore's latest story, which we'll get to tomorrow. But one point of clarity, Jim, you brought up Snacks Harrison. Are we learning that he is, in fact, not retired? Just to clear that up for listeners.
Well, at the end of the season last year, he said he was kind of burned out. His body wasn't feeling it, and that he indicated that maybe he was going to retire. But I think last month. There's also reports out there from the NFL Network that he's interested in playing again, and so he looks like he's still a free agent and not necessarily retired.
Okay. All right. Just to clear it up for listeners out there, so he may still be available. Meanwhile, we talked about this going into the break. Quentin Dunbar, the newest acquisition of your Seattle Seahawks, and his impact on the pass rush. Now, Dave, generally we talk about, you know, the pass rush helping the secondary, because if the pass rush isn't getting there, it allows the quarterbacks all the time in the world, and even the best defensive backs are going to have a hard time keeping up with receivers after 3 or 4 seconds. But what about the reverse? What about just having a really good secondary, which it looks like they potentially do with him and obviously Shaq Griffin? We'll see what happens with Trey Flowers. Maybe Blair's going to be back there. McDonald's going to be back there. Quandre Diggs for a full season. So you feel better about that secondary. If it turns out to be a really strong secondary, can it have the trickle-down effect that we always talk about the pass rush having?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those two are pretty related. And I just, going back through the games again, said it before, I've never noticed in years past watching this defense how quickly the ball came out of quarterbacks' hands, of opponents. And so, you know, that's something that stood out to me this year. Watching, that was a big difference. So that may, you know, and I'm not saying it's all of the answer for the pass rush, but I think it's at least some of it. But, and, you know, with Quentin Dunbar, I think it just makes you so much more competitive in the defensive backfield. Really like this guy. You know, I went and looked at, he had 4 interceptions last year. And there's some debate as to whether he was the best or not. But so he had 4 in his season last year. I had 3 interceptions in my career, okay? One was really, really good. I worked hard for it. It was a good, I fooled Dan Marino. I made him think I was going to cover a deep route, and I jumped an underneath route. So that was great. Worst run back in the history of the NFL. It was awful. Actually, Dan Marino ended up like tackling me by just, I think he was running to the sidelines to get a drink of Gatorade and ran into me. But just, but the other two that I had were, they were bounced. They were balls that were tipped, and they were just bounced up in the air. Anybody could have caught it. So I went through and kind of looked at, you know, what kind of interceptions were these, and a couple of them were really good, man. And one of them, and I talked to the guy yesterday who covers the Redskins, and, you know, we were talking about what kind of a player he is. He's a very smart player. But what he was, one of the picks that he got, he was bailing to his deep third. You know, they were playing cover 3, so that's 3 deep, 4 underneath. And so he was bailing. And it's also single high safety, okay? So that doesn't
really
say anything. Yeah, because there's a safety in the middle. There's a safety in the middle, and then, you know, a single high safety, I guess they think, you know, that indicates man-to-man coverage, which, why don't you just say it's cover 1, man-to-man coverage. But he was bailing to his deep third, and what happened was the guy that he was kind of, you know, dropping to ran a post, so he let him go to the inside to the safety, as he should do, and then he peeled off and ended up picking off a deep crosser, which you see in the NFL, those deep crossing patterns are killers, and they've gotten the Seahawks in the past. And so just the way he read that and jumped off of that route and went and got himself a pick, I mean, it was a smart play by him. The other one, I hate to bring this up, but he had one in Miami that looked a lot like the Malcolm Butler play in Super Bowl 49. I mean, it was a little slant, and he drove on it really hard, and basically, just like Malcolm Butler ran into Ricardo Lockett, he just stayed up and somehow caught it. So, and then the other thing about him, really good in the run game, really good. From what I saw, as far as staying home, you know, there was 2 or 3 times where they were trying to run either a reverse or some kind of a trick play to the backside. And he stayed home, and then he actually had a really good tackle on J.D. McKissick, and McKissick actually got a 15-yard penalty for face masking because he was trying to jam Quentin Dunbar in the face and grabbed his face mask, and he still was able to fight through it and make a tackle for no gain. So the only thing that's disappointing, I guess, about this is that he's not going to help you on the inside. He's never played inside. He can't be like a nickel I mean, I guess he could be, but I, you know, having converted from wide receiver, the way his body type is, everything, he's fit to play corner. And the other bad news could be that he could possibly displace one of the two corners that that we all know and love.
Well, yeah, Quentin Dunbar, I think to this point of the eight acquisitions the Seahawks have made, I think he's number one on the list. I put him over Greg Olsen, and I ranked him 1-8 if you want to read it on 710sports.com. And I'm just excited about Dunbar coming in. And you look at John Schneider and what he did last year to strengthen that secondary, getting a Quandre Diggs for a fifth rounder. I think he's done it again with Quentin Dunbar. I mean, if you put a lot of faith in Pro Football Focus, he graded out as the second-best corner last year to Richard Sherman. So we'll see. I mean, the Washington beat writer we talked to earlier this week refuted that a little bit, but still a highly above-average safe or quarterback anyway. And you expect him to come in and compete with Trey Flowers on the right side, but you know, maybe he'll compete on the left side with Shaq Griffin. We'll see how the Seahawks play that, but I mean, the logical thinking is that he's going to battle over there on the right side, but it's going to be interesting anyway once he gets to town.
It is. I just feel better about what they have to work with. Depending, you know, we'll see what choices they end up making at each spot, but it just feels like the options are better than, you know, Lano Hill, Tedrick Thompson, you know, Jamar Taylor, a lot of what they were dealing with last year. So at least at this point, much more optimistic about the options they do have there. Meanwhile, we get a chance to see the return, or we might get a chance to see the return of the Seahawks throwback uniforms very soon. We'll hear about that when we sweep the dial, coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
I think once the helmet rule changes next year, we might have some creamsicles and some throwbacks, which I think are the best uniforms in the league. I think the new ones are going to be really, really sharp, more classical.
The voice of Bucks head coach Bruce Arians talking to Dan Patrick, saying the Bucks may go back to those creamsicle uniforms from the 70s, which were pretty cool looking. But I guess more importantly, the NFL is expected to change their one helmet only rule in 2021, which means teams like the Seahawks, who have a different logo on their old helmets, would be allowed to wear throwbacks to the Dave Wyman years. How about that?
Yeah, bring it back. I like those uniforms. Those were awesome. They had gray pants. I think there was like a green and blue stripe on the side. And then I don't know what you would call that, blue. But then silver helmets. The silver helmets were cool. And I loved the Tampa Bay Buccaneer creamsicle uniforms as well. You know, it's funny, you know, you look at like these XFL uniforms and they look kind of cheesy in the beginning. And then, you know, I'm sure back in 1976, the Buccaneer helmet, I'm not so sure about that Buccaneer guy on the side with the knife in his mouth, but
you don't like that?
I'm not sure they could do that anymore. Yeah, but he was, he looked like, Jim, you'll remember, Errol Flynn. He was actually in a movie called The Seahawk. He was like a pirate or something like that. And it kind of looked like Errol Flynn, that whatever that dude was on the side of the helmet. I wasn't into that, but I like the colors.
We may have lost Jim there for a second. We're going to check on him.
All right.
Do you remember Errol Flynn? Bob?
I know the name. I don't know what his face looks like, but I've heard his name, obviously, a bunch. Why don't you think they could pull off that guy on the side of the helmet, though? What do you mean it wouldn't be allowed?
Oh, no, I'm just saying I don't think it's very good. I don't like that part of it. Yeah.
Oh, really? I kind of dug it, but yeah.
Somebody has a picture already of a proposed logo with the same guy with like a feather coming out of his hat, and then it's Tom Brady's face.
I'm proud of Adam Silver. I'm proud of the NBA and the way we've reacted. I think we've led the way, and hopefully we'll lead the way on this. I mean, you know, no one has perfect information right now, and so all decisions are tough, but you know, if I had to guess based off the people I've talked to at the CDC and other places, I would say that, you know, the over-under would be June 1st, and I'm taking the under, that hopefully by middle of May, we're starting to get back to normal, and the NBA is playing games, maybe not with fans, but we're playing games, because sports play such an important role. You know, people want something to cheer for. People want something to rally around. People want something to be excited about.
The voice of Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban showing some level of optimism, and he went on to say that he's, you know, he's talked to people in the CDC, and, you know, apparently he's got some connections there. So he's basing his opinions on those conversations. I hope he's accurate. At this point, I feel like everybody's speculating, and you're hoping for the best, sort of preparing for the worst. But man, just to have a light at the end of the tunnel, if he's getting some level of information that makes him think, you know what, June 1st is an over-under date and he's taking the under, that would be remarkable. Even if there aren't crowds right away, that would tell you, all right, people are feeling better about things. It feels like this thing's headed the right direction. I would love that to be true.
Yeah, it's just been a bombardment of, you know, bad news. But, you know, look, sports are important. But, I mean, if you were to undo what we've already, you know, done because of that, that would definitely not be the way to go. But I just wonder, to me, I feel like they're young guys and pretty healthy, and it is largely affecting people with pre-existing conditions and older people and things like that. And I just wonder if, like, they can get to a point where they can just play the games. You don't have to have a crowd there, but at least something on TV and let them continue to, you know, to play out the season. That would be great. I would just love to see that, but it seems like a long ways away right now, doesn't it?
It does. It feels like an eternity, and I'm with you. I don't think you undo anything that's been done by being too aggressive with it. But if again, we talked about getting the all clear from the medical experts. They get something like that where they feel like they can conduct these things with no crowd to start and then work their way into crowds, then I'm all for it. Because I think sports, as much as in the grand scheme of things, they're not important to your everyday life, but in a situation where people have lost jobs, had family members stricken by this, I think it could be a great diversion just for a couple of hours a night.
It's been very difficult for me and my family, to say the least. She's the head of our household. She's the boss. She's been in a medically induced coma since that day. I haven't talked to her, haven't been able to obviously communicate with her. I've just been getting updates on her condition. It's rough. And, you know, day by day, we're just seeing how it goes. We're being positive. I'm being very positive. So I'm just keeping the strength up for everybody and my family. To only make this video so that people understand that the severity of this disease is real.
The voice of Carl Anthony Towns, speaking of the NBA, and put that video on Instagram last night talking about his mother, who was diagnosed with the coronavirus, being put into a medically induced coma. I mean, it's no joke what's happening. I would hope there aren't deniers out there anymore, or people saying, oh, this is much ado about nothing. It's not accurate. It's just not accurate if you're paying attention at all. And I think that was the point of his video, is trying to stress the importance of following the guidelines. And this is not being blown up. It's not, you know, this minor little flu, and it's equivalent of the yearly flu that happens. This is a different thing, a much more aggressive situation people are dealing with. And it's scary because right now there is no cure. There is no treatment for it. So you've got to practice as many safety habits as you possibly can. You know, it's an inconvenience for some, but I'd rather be inconvenienced than dealing with something as serious as this.
Well, it's so hard for people if you have, you know, older family members. I mean, you can't go in and, you know, if somebody's going to pass away, you can't say hello to them. You can't be around them. You see some of these pictures in the paper over the past few weeks of, you know, people waving at, you know, whether it's a family member or a friend through a window, you know, because they're quarantined. And so, yeah, it's difficult. We'll see how it comes out. But, yeah, right now, I remember we talked about yesterday Cuomo, governor of New York was saying, you know, to the young people, really trying to get to them, because they're, you know, when you're younger, you're invincible. You think, I'm not going to get it. And, you know, and that's sometimes where it gets spread. So a lot of the younger people, I think, are doing, starting to understand, doing a better job. So, boy, certainly hit hard, you know, hit home for him.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up, NFL Network's Michael Silver. He's going to join us next. We'll talk about NFL free agency, Jadeveon Clowney. All of it will be covered next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.